This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the 3rd of February 2012. It's here, friend. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 3rd of February 2012, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. Your readers today are Jane Harding.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Sheila Shepherd.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. I'm afraid we're going to start with two very sad announcements. First of all, Tricia Bingham passed away peacefully on the 29th of January 2012. Tricia was involved with Winchester Talking News on the side of the magazine where she did lots of work. We hope to have more details about that in the March edition of the Talking magazine. I'm afraid I also have to tell you that Ian Crowe, a long-time volunteer with the Winchester Talking newspaper, died peacefully at home on the morning of Friday the 27th of January. He was 74. Many of you will know of Ian's many interests and activities in Winchester since he moved here at the end of the 60s and took a maths lecturer appointment at King Alfred's College. His passion for theatre was satisfied by the opportunities both in the college and around Winchester. In the college, he was a popular and well-remembered participant in theatrical productions. He became a member of the Chesil Theatre a year after moving to Winchester, and, as well as going on to take many roles in Chesil productions, he turned to direction. In this, he was extremely successful and extended his considerable talent to directing for the Winchester Operatic Society. Ian's quirky, even mischievous sense of humour was never far from the surface. His imprint on his productions was easy to detect. For years, Ian was a Samaritan, a role he valued. Also, Ian's enthusiasm for his sessions with the Winchester Talking newspaper never diminished, even if he didn't always agree with what he was reading, and actually once said so on air. Ian's involvement from the early 70s with the festival players who performed dramatised historical accounts in Winchester Cathedral led him to another long-standing involvement with chapter and verse, which presents dramatised themed readings to local organisations, raising significant funds for local charities. Ian's familiar, richly toned speaking voice was a jewel in the crown of that ensemble. Only last year did he devise a performance script for them, along the theme of Eat, Drink and Be Merry, for tomorrow you may diet. At his own request, Ian's funeral will be private. However, his partner Douglas will host a celebration of Ian's life at Winchester's Theatre Royal. The date, probably in April, will be confirmed as soon as possible. Winchester Talking Newspaper will be informed of the details. It is hoped that contributions from each of Ian's activities, including Winchester Talking Newspaper, will be offered to the light-hearted event as tribute to his wide-reaching, generous and good-natured involvement in so many areas. By request, no flowers, please. Donations in memory of Ian may be made to the Chesil Theatre and sent to Richard Steele & Partners, Alderman House, 12 to 14 City Road, Winchester, Hampshire, S0238SD. That's Richard Steele & Partners, Alderman House, 12 to 14 City Road, Winchester, Hampshire, S0238SD. And now we're going to go on to what's on. There's a Haydn and Mozart show. The Camerata Salzburg Orchestra will perform a programme of Haydn and Mozart at the Anvil, Basingstoke, on Sunday, February the 12th at 7:45 p.m. The orchestra will be led by Czech conductor Thomas Hanus and joined by Grammy-winning violinist Hilary Hahn. The evening begins with Haydn's vigorous Fire Symphony, followed by Mozart's Fourth Violin Concerto, and ends with Mozart's Symphony No. 29. Tickets are priced from £18 to £36, or £10 for under-16s and full-time students. Call 01256 844 244 or go to the website, which is www.anvilarts.org.uk. Something completely different to that. Michael Bublé Tribute Night. The Holiday Inn in Winchester is holding a Michael Bublé Tribute Night on Friday, February the 17th. It will be part of the venue's 2012 season of An Evening with further acts to be named soon. For the first show, Max Hutton will return as Michael Bublé following a sold-out show at the Holiday Inn several months ago. The evening includes a three-course meal from the hotel's AA Rosette winning brasserie. The venue is off the A31 Percy Hobbs roundabout at Maughan Hill. Tickets are £24.95 per person. Visit www.highwinchester.co.uk or call 08719 429 188 to book. And another music event, British Music Marks Jubilee. The London Concert Orchestra will celebrate the Queen's Jubilee at the Anvil with Happy and Glorious on February the 19th at 3 p.m. Jenny Bond will host the concert, which will include A Land of Hope and Glory, There'll Always Be an England, and The White Cliffs of Dover. For tickets, call 01256 844 244. Then on Thursday, February the 16th, Goldilocks and the Three Motts at the Hospital of St Cross, St Cross Road, Winchester, SO239SD, 7:30 p.m. A talk to Hampshire archaeological dowsers by Sue Brown. The talk will concentrate on investigating medieval motts, ancient shrines and Roman temples. Churches and Roman temples sometimes replaced earlier Iron Age shrines, which often lay on top of the Bronze Age sites. It is interesting to explore the continuity of these sites within the context of nearby settlements and trackways. Admission at the door, HADS members £4, non-members £5. At the Nuffield Theatre, Southampton, there's Romeo and Juliet. That's Thursday, February the 2nd to Saturday, February the 18th. At 7:30 and some matinees. For more details, please phone their box office, 023 8067 1771. That's 023 8067 1771. Something nearer home, we've got the Chesil Theatre in Winchester, and they're putting on Breaking the Silence. Now that's on from February the 6th to February the 11th at 7:45 in the evenings. And there is a matinee on February the 11th at 2:30. For details of that, please go to their box office site, which is www.ticketsource.co.uk/Chesil Theatre. Sister Act is on at the Mayflower from the 21st of February to the 3rd of March. That's Whoopi Goldberg Stage Entertainment, the original. And if you want tickets, you can go to 02380 711 811 or their website www.mayflower.org.uk. And here's the popular one coming up again. It's The Phantom of the Opera. Cameron Mackintosh's spectacular new production, and tickets are on sale now already. The production is on from the 22nd of January to the 16th of February 2011. I'm not surprised it's on, or they're on sale already if it started on the 22nd of January. But if you want some tickets, the box office is 023 80711 811. And you can book online at mayflower.org.uk. Let's move on to the lighting up times. And the lighting up times. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 3rd of Feb at 7:41 a.m. and begins at 4:59 p.m. on Wednesday, 8th of December. It ends at 7:33 a.m. and begins at 5:08 p.m. If you have any problems with your memory sticks, please contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement. Front page headlines this week are: search on to find new school site, campaigners win pedestrian crossing, and Jamie Oliver to open city eatery. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Jane?
And the first headline is: search on to find new school site, new primary needed to cope with big demand for places in Winchester. Hampshire school bosses have begun searching for a site for a new primary school in Winchester City to cope with a leap in demand for places. The County Council is planning to expand existing primaries with temporary classrooms to provide an extra 80 places this September. This is equal to 2.5 new reception classes. Spiralling demand has been put down to a baby boom and hundreds of new homes built in the city over the last 5 years. As previously reported, Weston, Winnell, All Saints in Highcliffe, Hairstock, St Peter's Catholic, Kingsworthy and Sunhill Infant in Alresford have been earmarked for double temporary classrooms, estimated to cost £100,000 each. Some head teachers and parents are worried greater pupil numbers will put a strain on school halls, kitchens and playgrounds. County education officers met head teachers and chairs of governors on Tuesday to hammer out the plans. Councillor Roy Perry, executive lead member for Children's Services, said the county was aware of pressure on core facilities and would tackle shortfalls if funds were available. Talking to the Chronicle, Councillor Perry stressed temporary classrooms were a temporary solution to meet the immediate need for places in September. The Deputy County Council leader said, "Identifying a site for a new school within a city such as Winchester is not easy, but that is under active consideration as an alternative to expanding existing schools." He added the public consultation on School Places Plan 2011-15 was still open, and the views of schools and governors will be taken into consideration. His comments come as Winchester MP Steve Brine is canvassing parents, teachers and the University of Winchester to see if there is support for setting up the city's first free school, a flagship new Tory policy. Mr. Brine said it was good news the County Council had acknowledged the need for a new school, but it needed to open its doors as soon as September 2013. The Winchester and Chandler's Ford Tory said the county had a fiendishly difficult job to predict demand for places, but his post-bag surgery and the number of temporary classrooms planned this autumn suggested a crisis was looming. Mr. Brine said, "It is no longer a case of having to wait and see what the local education authority will provide. Michael Gove's new free school policy puts power in the hands of parents. Plans for a free school are in the pipeline in Whiteley, possibly in a converted office block in Solent Park. Run by parents, teachers and charities, free schools are funded directly by government and outside local authority control. The County Council has been given £7.8 million to provide more primary places. The money will help fund temporary classrooms in Winchester, one of six hotspots across the county. No sites for a new school have emerged, although the County Council is a major landowner in the city."
Now, may we have the story behind the second front page headline, please, Noel?
Yes, this sounds like good news for a change. Campaigners win pedestrian crossing. Localism in action hailed as the measure is approved. Road safety campaigners in Winchester have succeeded in tackling one of the city's busiest roads. Residents of St Cross have been calling for Hampshire County Council to provide a pedestrian crossing at the junction of St Cross Road and Stanmore Lane to protect children and families walking to school. The route is heavily used for commuter and school traffic, providing direct access into the centre of Winchester from the M3. But the council has now announced it will install crossings to the north and south of the junction, with designs being finalised by officers. The news came last Friday after council leader Councillor Ken Thornburgh held talks with St Cross resident Matt Nisbet, Winchester MP Steve Bryan and Councillor Brian Collin, who represents St Cross on the County Council. Mr Nisbet of St Cross Road has been leading the charge for the crossing and he said he was happy with the result. He said, "Naturally, I'm delighted with this very positive step forward and look forward to the details being finalised. I think this is a great example of localism in action and have been really impressed by the way our elected representatives have pulled together, regardless of party political affiliations, to work together to achieve what promises to be a great improvement for people who live in this part of Winchester." But Mr Nisbet said the campaigners were not finished yet and wanted another crossing installed along Stanmore Lane. The issue has galvanised the local community, with around 100 residents turning out at a public meeting last July at St Faith's Primary School. Mr Bryan said, "This has been a huge community effort, and it's been a real pleasure for me to help drive it over the line. There are a few loose ends to tie up, but the meeting with Ken Thornburgh was critical. We're almost there, and about time too." Councillor Collin added, "I'm delighted to have been able to play my part in getting a good solution for this important route for pedestrians." The council is planning to carry out the work during the 2012 school summer holidays to cause minimal disruption to motorists.
And the third story behind the front page headline, please, Sheila.
Jamie Oliver to open City Eatery. Winchester is strengthening its reputation as a high-class restaurant city, with news that celebrity chef Jamie Oliver is set to open a base in the High Street. The Jamie Oliver Group has taken a 25-year lease on the building, a former Pizza Hut, and will open a Union Jack's restaurant later this year. The branch will be the first Union Jack's outside London, where the first branch opened last autumn. The restaurant offers something new, a British pizza. Called flatbreads, the pizzas have toppings such as mixed field and wild mushrooms, Westcombe cheddar, pickled red onion, tarragon and chervil, or roast shoulder of pig, quince and Bramley sauce, Cropwell Bishop Stilton, crackling and watercress. A spokesman for Green and Partners, the London-based letting agents, said Union Jack's was due to move in to start fitting out in the next 2 to 3 weeks. No one was available to comment from the Jamie Oliver Group at the time of going to press. In recent years, Winchester has become a foodie destination, with the first ever Hotel du Vin, as well as Brasserie Blanc set up by Raymond Blanc, and Loch Fine. Hampshire-based James Martin also co-owns a deli in Winchester. Two restaurants have won Michelin stars, the Black Rat and the Chesil Rectory, both on Chesil Street. Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said, "We are terribly excited. It is brilliant news and adds to the lustre of the town." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the former Pizza Hut site in Winchester High Street.
Thank you. And that concludes the front page headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, Belgarum Diary, Historical Items, Chronicle Comment and First Person. I shall start with the death notices. Adlam, Doris, nay King Adlam, peacefully at home, aged 95. Bingham, Tricia Audrey Bingham, peacefully. Blair, William James Bill Blair, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 83. Brewer, Kathleen Brewer, formerly of Sparshot, Winchester, peacefully at St Mary's Hospital in Sechelt, British Columbia, aged 93. Crow, Ian Crow, peacefully at home, aged 74. Lovelock, Dorothy Lovelock, in hospital, aged 69. Marsh, Kathleen May Nay Bignall Marsh, aged 85, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Price, Ronald Price, suddenly in hospital. And finally, Stowell, Arthur Stowell, peacefully aged 93. And now it's time for Christian Comment, read by Jane.
And the Christian Comment is entitled, We Are Part of a World of Change. Douglas Adams, best known for The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, said, Everything that's already in the world when you're born is just normal. He was referring to technology, and most of us can relate to his insight. For example, do we keep up with friends by phone or Facebook? Is our shopping in the high street or online? Many of our preferred choices will have been picked up at an early age, reflecting when we were born. However, we all experience change. Adams goes on to explain how we adapt to change early in our lives. Anything that gets invented before you turn 30 is incredibly exciting and creative. Embracing change is stimulating, however. Anything that gets invented after you're 30 is against the natural order of things until it's been around for about 10 years, when it gradually turns out to be all right, really. Adams said this back in 1999, and since then, the pace of change has increased, along with our ability, even in the over 30s, to be excited by change. However, where does this culture of change leave the church? The Church of England is trying to proclaim an historic biblical faith afresh in each generation. We are part of a world of change, but with a 2,000-year-old bedrock in the person of Jesus and the experience of Israel before him. What change is part of proclaiming the gospel afresh, and what, to use Adam's caricature, is against the natural order of things? Perhaps it's only by experiencing change that we know, with hindsight, if that change has been enriching. For example, the benefits of the internet have been amazing in education, business, friendships and family ties, and far outweigh any disadvantages, e.g. privacy issues, which can be dealt with. On the other hand, a culture of running up debts by individuals, companies and countries has led to financial crises for the last 4 years. In matters of faith, it's often the experience of change that confirms whether a certain development enriches our faith or undermines it. The personal experience of women priests themselves, as well as the congregations in which they minister, is fueling the desire to have women bishops. Knowing people in loving same-sex relationships is softening traditionalist opposition to blessing such relationships. It's also the personal experience of many Christians which has caused them to oppose certain social changes, especially when there is a widening of inequality. Some change is decay, and some is life-enhancing.
We have 13 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, Barton Farm, it's time to move on, says Martin Bell. Sir, the Barton Farm debate was won by the development argument in October last year at the Theatre Royal. The panel had two antes, and the rest of the panellists various interests or experience in planning. I went along to have my say, along the lines of, we elect councillors to make these decisions, it's called democracy, please let them get on with it. But I felt strangely unrepresented at the meeting, as the stage was set for the objectors once again. And once again, they lost the debate. The City Council voted to include Barton Farm for development in its plan. This is the democratic process carried out by our elected councillors. I admire tenacity, but surely now this is done to death. The objectors have been given airtime and stage time way beyond that which their small number would deserve. But congratulations on being a very well organised and highly vocal minority interest group. Yet, week after week, the Hampshire Chronicle is still printing objectors' letters. In a recent edition, we actually had two letters from the same household, with another from that same house the following week for good measure. Are these people really concerned about losing agricultural land, or is it not in my backyard? Are they suddenly planning experts who can estimate numbers for Bushfield Camp, having spotted an opportunity the experts somehow seem to have missed? Doubtful. You could be forgiven for thinking that it's now only the Chronicle that wants to continue the debate, even stoke it up, simply to sell more copies. Shouldn't we be talking about affordable housing, the economy, moral leadership, or something else a little more relevant? However much I hate the phrase, it really is time to move on. Martin Bell, Shepherd's Lane, Compton.
And another letter about Barton Farm from R.F. Bickley. Winchester City Council leader should justify his decision. Sir, I read with interest and some incredulity Councillor Beckett's recent letter in which he sought to justify the inclusion of Barton Farm as a selected site for development instead of Bushfield Camp or indeed any other area. He presumably is aware of other possible sites in the Winchester area which could be considered for possible development. In any event, much as he seeks to justify the inclusion of Barton Farm and pleads a decision made after 7 hours of debate, he fails completely to explain his role in such a decision. It appears from your report that he imposed a three-line whip on his own party, who thus had no alternative other than to support him or abstain. The council leader should justify why there was a three-line whip, thus ensuring that Barton Farm was the only decision that could result from the meeting. However long it lasted, one can only hope he can explain his reasoning. R.F. Bickley, East Woodhay, Hairstock, Winchester.
And this letter is from Norman Pasley of Warsash and is about a demand for school places never ending. Sir, your leading articles, School Expansion a Worry, says Head, and 200 Home Pip Manor Given Go-Ahead, in January the 26th, prompt some thoughts. You report that Western Primary School could grow from 420 pupils to 600 in 7 years, or 5% per annum. The extra income from more reception year pupils appears to be more than offset by traffic congestion, insufficient play areas, pressure on facilities, temporary classrooms and alterations to existing buildings. No doubt the other five schools marked for expansion have similar issues. On balance, school expansion appears to be a worry to everyone involved. Pitt Manor is another example of expansion. In this case, new houses for families and first-time buyers. Silver Hill, if built, would be another expansion of 200 homes. Nearer to me, we have a plan for 7,500 homes north of Fareham. These difficult problems have the same underlying cause, increasing population. In 1961, Winchester city population was about 29,000. Today, 50 years on, it is about 42,000. On this population trajectory, the demand for new school places and new homes will never end. However, in a balanced community with smaller families and limited net migration, immigration minus migration, no extra school places or houses would be needed. This, of course, can be said for all towns in Hampshire and the rest of the UK. Nothing can be done about these expansions this year, but we can start to debate and change the future. The community is responsible for the size of the next generation. The government has said it will cut net migration by reducing immigration to the tens of thousands. From a long-term view, would you like another 13,000 people, about 5,500 houses in Winchester in the next 50 years? How many new classrooms would be needed? Would the city be a better place to live in with 55,000 people?
Jan Church says, Sir, we live in very strange times when the wishes of Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, our local MP, local politicians and people are overruled in favour of a single landowner and a developer. I remain to be convinced that Pitt Manor development, approved by a planning inspector last week, will have no effect on traffic congestion in the Romsey Road, or that it will provide affordable housing Winchester desperately needs. Jan Church, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And this letter from L.J. White, entitled The Silent Killer. Sir, I was most interested in Keith Shepherd's account, Chronicle January 26th, of how his undiagnosed cancer was picked up on a simple blood test prior to giving blood. Some years ago I was a donor, but at one session the nurse thought my blood pressure too high. She gave it time to settle, but it was still too high, so she advised me to see my GP. Subsequently, I was diagnosed with high blood pressure, requiring medication to reduce it. Up until then, I had no symptoms, but it is the silent killer. So the moral here is doing someone a good turn can save your life. L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
And this letter is from Rupert Pitt of Park Road in Winchester, entitled Public Transport Must Be Cheaper. Sir, Winchester City Council has pledged to cut carbon emissions by 30% over the next 4 years. This will mean a reduction of 50,000 tonnes a year over that period. According to Robert Hutchison, who founded the Winchester Action on Climate Change, under the Council's current plans, this will only reduce by 500 tonnes of carbon emissions a year, as reported in the Chronicle of January the 19th. We can start by reducing car use. We all know how unpleasant it is to walk along Jury Street, North Wall, St George's Street, Sussex Street and the Stockbridge Road, let alone the wider long-term effects these carbon emissions have on the heating up of the planet. It will help if public transport is cheaper, so we use our cars less. But we are discouraged. Between 1997 and 2009, the cost of motoring went down by 13%, but bus and coach fares went up by 17%, and rail fares by 7%. By January this year, some British rail fares were 10 times higher than in Europe. So we are turned off public transport by the cost and use our cars more, which results in more carbon emissions. There are wider issues, such as poorer people who use buses and trains being penalised by high costs, while catering for cars has a destructive effect, with 19 acres of land in Winchester, which can be better used, given over to car use. All city councillors should be making efforts to promote cheaper public transport.
John Duckworth says, lost opportunities return to haunt us. Sir, George Stoney's letter of last week regretted the routing of the 1936 bypass to the east rather than to the west of Winchester. Memory or myth has it that Sir George Cooper persuaded his fellow councillors to adopt the eastern route so it did not impinge on his Hursley estate, now IBM. And we rue to this day the consequences of that lost opportunity. Similarly, future generations will look back with disbelief at the Beckett decision to lose the chance to develop the Bushfield site in order to spare the land to the north of the wooded ridge on Barton Farm. If this northern field had not belonged to Winchester College and thus now to Carla, but to the farmer owning the other side of the valley, it is most unlikely ever to have been earmarked for houses against the wishes of its owner. A great deal of development is dictated not by suitability of land, but by accident of ownership and the ambitions of the owner, which often, as in the case of Barton Farm, override such unsuitabilities as suburbia spilling over the ridge into this pastoral valley. It could be avoided by the use of Bushfield, which is much more suited given its history and position. But Carla, of course, does not own Bushfield, and it does not seem to care about the despoliation of Winchester in the eyes of its citizens, so long as it gets its development and attendant profit. John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop.
And W.A.C. Halliwell writes, New Lamps for Old. Sir, I have seen recently in the environs of Winchester a good deal of activity in the matter of street lights, which are being replaced by new ones. I should be glad to know the reason for this exercise, since I have found the lighting now being replaced quite satisfactory. Is there some inherent fault in the present street lighting system, and will its replacement be more cost-effective? Or is it, as I suspect, an exercise designed for the benefit of Southern Electric and some arcane bureaucracy within Hampshire County Council? W.A.C. Halliwell, St. James Villas, Winchester.
And Peter O'Shaughnessy writes a letter headed No Surprise to Me. Sir, I wasn't a bit surprised to hear that the willow tree at Derngate had closed, as I predicted as much to friends. Wrapped between forks of the Itchen, the setting of the beer garden was idyllic, and in summer usually thronged with customers. Not so last summer, when they stayed away in droves, and not hard to reason why. The accumulated mounds of bird droppings on the chairs and tables would have put anyone off their pint, and the staff seemed unwilling to clean it off. Talking of pints reminds me of another deterrent. The Willow Tree used to have a fine selection of real ales, but not last summer. I came to think the neglect might be wilful, and that the Green King might not be unhappy if the pub closed. The site would fetch a tidy sum if it were sold, and apartments were built on it. I hope I'm wrong, and that Green King finds another publican ready to take on the Willows. That's Peter O'Shaughnessy of the Broadway, Winchester.
Terence F. Wall says we should focus on local problems. Sir, here in Winchester we have problems of pollution and waste similar to those experienced by almost every community on Earth. But the climate change activists have played into the hands of the deniers by linking global warming so strongly with humanity's negative impact on the planet. We, with the council, who are financed and authorised to act on our behalf, should focus exclusively on those specific local problems. That will deliver solutions which are observable and beneficial to all of us, regardless of whether we are convinced, sceptical, or in denial of the connection between mankind's activities and climate change. Of course, this also happens to be the best and only way Winchester can do its bit towards reducing the negative impact that the plague of humanity has visited on nature. So, let's stop pretending that we are self-righteously acting for the good of the planet and concentrate on doing good things for ourselves here and now. I think they used to call it enlightened self-interest. Terence F. Wall, Westminster Gate, Winchester.
This letter from Peter Green of Ross-on-Wye. Time to take pride in Winchester. Sir, as a reasonably frequent visitor to Winchester, I regret I must agree with Councillor Berry's comments on the state of the city. Yes, it has beautiful buildings, and the new paving in the centre is a vast improvement. But where is the residents' pride in looking after their own properties? Last year, my family and I walked from the city centre to Magdalen Cemetery via the River Walk, Quarry Road and Alsford Road. I was surprised to encounter trees and bushes from private gardens hanging over the pavement. So in some places you could not walk without stooping, and elsewhere the pavement was all but completely blocked by overgrown hedges. Brambles sprouted from hedges whilst leaves were left uncollected outside private residences, making the pavement slippery. Come on, Winchester, take pride in your city. As your councillor says, it's your job to help, and it would make such a difference if it was for everyone, not just for visitors. Peter Green, Ross-on-Wye.
And Tony Burrows write that the Guildhall is a fitting place to display the Winchester model. Sir, may I offer a suggestion with regards to making the revamped Winchester Guildhall more attractive? Hidden away in some council store, doubtless deteriorating by the day, is Roger Brown's brilliant model of Victorian Winchester. This needs a home, and where better than the Guildhall complex? It would provide a unique tourist attraction. I doubt whether the marketing experts are aware of its existence, but I'm sure that some photographs and documentation can be found. That's Tony Burrows writing from St. Swithin Street in Winchester, to which the letter editor notes, Roger Brown, a former county planning officer, made the model after he retired in the mid-1980s. 15 feet in diameter and set in 1870, it featured the city's first street lighting scheme, with all the major buildings and inns lit realistically inside and out. And the letter is accompanied by a photograph of Roger Brown with a section of his model of 1870 Winchester showing houses, trees, streets and roads.
Stephen Skinner writes a letter headed One or the Other. Sir, I would hope Chris Gillam, as spokesman for Friends of the Earth, would at least understand how the internal combustion engine works if he wishes to help reduce pollution, Chronicle, January the 19th. Traffic calming measures, while reducing risk of accidents, will increase emissions. The acceptable 30-mile-an-hour limit in urban areas is below the optimum 50 to 60 miles per hour, and deliberately slowing traffic further will increase emissions even more. If you want lower emissions, get the traffic moving. If you want safer roads, slow it up. You can't have both. Stephen Skinner, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And that concludes all of the letters to the editor for this week. Thank you to all of the contributors. And now it's time for your say. We went out on the streets of Winchester and we asked passers-by, should public cash be used to restore Winchester's bus services after 9 p.m? Sheila has replies.
And Josephine Hatch, 79, a retired hospital worker from Lawn Street, Winchester, said, I think it's terrible that there are no more buses after 9 o'clock, and surely it would give somebody a job to drive them. But if people are rowdy, that can be difficult for the drivers. Ryan Knight, 28, a cleaning supervisor from Tower Street in Winchester, said, I don't need the buses because I don't really use them. I could see that it would be a problem for elderly people because they use them a lot, but I don't have a problem with the buses. Patricia Brown, 58, a coffee shop worker from Old Alsford, said, It is quite expensive to use taxis, so I can see a need for the buses. I think they should bring them back after 9 o'clock. I now have to walk into Alsford just to get my bus into Winchester. And lastly, Chris Cousins, 23, a former labourer of Winnell Manor Road, Winchester, said, I don't use the buses anyway, because it's better to walk and keeps you fit. I live in Winnell, and it costs about £1.10 to go into town on the bus, or 15 minutes to walk, so I just walk.
And Jane has Belgarum Diary for us.
And this week, Belgarum is taking an alternative look at the news with Who'll Have the Signs? The sad closure of the landmark Percy Hobbs pub poses an important question. What will happen to the Percy Hobbs pub signs? The pub at Maughan Hill, Winchester, was the new inn until it was renamed after its longest regular customer, making national headlines around 30 years ago. Two signs were painted in the likeness of the former farm worker who drank in the pub from the 1930s until his death. Now the signs stand forlornly outside the empty premises, which are soon set to become a furniture showroom, and there is a picture of the Percy Hobbs sign with the painting of Percy Hobbs himself. And the man behind the man. PM David Cameron stands up to speak in the House. But who is that in the row behind him and a little bit to his right? Step forward the Honourable Member for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Steve Bryan habitually takes a seat close to the action. He tells Belgarum, I'm just an early riser, enforced by young children, not by choice, I assure you, which means I'm often in Parliament before most other MPs and seats reserved by putting a prayer card in are first come, first served. Taking the same spot every time also helps the Speaker locate MPs as he chooses who will speak next. It also happens that my seat is neatly in the Speaker's eye line, so I tend to get more than my share of chances to speak in the Commons. And the last bit of Belgarum is the dormice are doing nicely, and it is accompanied by a little photograph of two tiny dormice balanced in somebody's hand. Rodents don't usually get much sympathy from the general public, but when you hear that two dormice weighing little more than a teaspoon of sugar are involved, Belgarum's heart aches. The furry duo were a whisker away from death when they were evicted from their nest by a cat. Since then, they have been transported to Paignton Zoo after being saved by Hart Wildlife Rescue at Medstead. The zoo report that the rodents have now grown to a whopping 19 grams. Not so adorable anymore, then.
And now we're going back through the years for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Noel.
Yes, two items from 1987. Fears are growing that the British Telecom engineers' strike could bring business to a grinding halt. As Winchester businessmen keep their fingers crossed that lines remain intact, the action has been escalated by clerical workers joining engineers on the picket lines. The dispute over pay and changes affects little over 1% of the Solent area's 500,000 subscribers, but concern about its effects will increase while there is no end in sight. And secondly, local archaeologists hope Winchester's Central Car Park site will yield fields of national finds. Local archaeologists hope Winchester's Central Car Park site will yield finds of national or even international importance. Starting in March, they will spend 17 months excavating the Brooks area prior to development of the site. Council officers are examining the possibility of a weatherproof tent over the site. This will enable it to be run as a tourist attraction and allow the dig to continue even in bad weather.
And 50 years ago, please, Sheila?
50 years ago, 1962. Winchester District Association of Parish Councils discussed the danger to village people through speeding vehicles and the need for road improvements. The county committee is collecting data about places which are dangerous, following a complaint from Twyford Parish Council, where the need for something to be done to reduce danger to pedestrians has been emphasised by the occurrence of accidents. And secondly, the principles of Romanesque and Gothic periods of art were illustrated in the Winchester Bible. Dr. Walter Oakeshott, FSA, former head of Winchester College, told Hants and Winchester branch of the English-speaking Union on Saturday. The Bible was made around the years 1170 to 1190, a time of transition between Romanesque and Gothic periods. Dr. Oakeshott explained the two styles and their difference in relation to the Winchester Bible.
To 100 years ago, please, Jane.
100 years ago, 1912. On Wednesday, the magnanimity of Captain Standish, esteemed owner of the Marwell Estates and generous master of the Hambledon Hounds, was experienced once more by the cordial invitations to the tenant farmers of the neighbourhood to shoot over his extensive coverts. Two parties were formed, one shooting over the western part of the estate, the other the eastern. Both much enjoyed themselves, and after several hours' hard walking and shooting, the excellent lunch provided by the generous host was keenly appreciated. And one of the most interesting of the works carried on in connection with the Bishop of Winchester's Fund is the mission work amongst the deaf and dumb of the diocese. How interesting and useful the work is was again demonstrated on Monday on the occasion of the annual meeting of the executive of the mission held at Wolsey Church House, Winchester.
Finally, 200 years ago, please, Noel.
Yes, two items from 1812. The Leopard Man of War, which arrived on Monday from Lisbon, sailed on the 8th with a fleet per signal from His Majesty's ship Endymion, she being at that time chased by two French frigates and a brig. Previous to parting with the convoy, Leopard signalled for the ships to proceed as they were best able for their own security. At daylight next morning, six sails were in sight. The Leopard afterwards went in chase with the Endymion, which has not yet returned. And we were this morning favoured with a sight of a letter from one of the principal lace manufacturers of Nottingham, viz. The disturbances have not abated. The mob are now such complete masters that they have broke or stopped all lace frames. There were 70 frames destroyed on Saturday night, 32 the night before, and 27 on Thursday. If this goes on, and it seems no force can check it, we shall not have a frame standing in another week.
And now it's time for the editorial comment, and it's read by Sheila.
Editorial comment this week is entitled, Brand Winchester is a Powerful Thing. Local businesses again have the chance to enter the Hampshire Chronicle's Winchester Business Excellence Awards, launched last week. Organised with the BID and Hampshire Chamber of Commerce and sponsored by law firm Dutton Gregory, the long-running awards, now in their 10th year, celebrate the successes of the private sector. They are a key part of the Winchester business calendar. We are told that the economy is in its worst shape since the 1930s, and every reader probably knows someone who is struggling in the current downturn. But the fact remains that Winchester is having a remarkably good recession. Unemployment is measured in the hundreds compared to the thousands in the last major recession of the early 1990s. The High Street was buzzing over Christmas as thousands of people arrived in coaches from across the country. And further proof of resilience comes with news that celebrity chef Jamie Oliver is poised to open in Winchester the first branch outside London of his new Union Jack's chain in the former Pizza Hut premises. Meanwhile, Winchester-based entrepreneurial estate agent Graham Evans is opening a string of new offices across Hampshire. Yes, times are tough, but the power of the Winchester brand is holding firm.
Now it's first person, read by Noel.
First person this week is from George Hayter, who says he demurs on Ludwig and the PM. He's got away with it for far too long, that Beethoven. The self-important German composer in full flow two centuries ago was a one-man revolution who changed the nature of classical music. He brought drama and introspection to composing and elevated it from background music to high art. He's still getting accolades now. The finale of his Ninth Symphony has been adopted as the EU anthem, and the da-da-da-da that kicks off the fifth has become the most famous series of notes in history. No composer is more respected, so I'm amazed that no one seems to have noticed that he's hardly ever come up with a decent tune. So he was strong on innovation, but gorgeous melody was a destination he rarely reached. The Beethoven ditty adopted by the EU is more suited to a drunken sing-along in a Bavarian beer hall than the CD collection of a serious music lover. As for da-da-da-da, that's not a tune at all. I hesitate to condemn the acclaimed master of Western music, but I suspect he is no more wearing clothes than the emperor was. I'm beginning to feel the same about David Cameron trying to balance the government's budget. Like Beethoven's canon, Cameron's policy is respected by most of the British public, who naturally reason that the appropriate response to a debt is to reduce debt. But I've always understood the Great Depression in the 1930s, America, was ended not by cuts in spending, but by splashing out on big projects like the Hoover Dam, which created jobs and got the US economy rolling again. More spending is the approach that Labour's Ed Balls is advocating, and I think he has a case. Balls is constantly on telly saying the coalition has cut spending too much and too soon. His message, boost jobs now and worry about balancing the budget later. A similar debate is raging in part of Southampton suburbs known as Eastleigh. The borough council there wants to splash out big time on the Rose Bowl. The Lib Dems are buying the stadium from Hampshire Cricket in a lease-back deal. Lib Dem group leader Keith Howes has also got party backing to lavish millions on building a stylish hotel to curve around the pitch. He says the improvements will attract big international matches and boost the local economy by £55 million a year, creating jobs. But Conservative councillors warn that the plan will put the council in long-term debt to the tune of £103 million. It's difficult to know who's right about these things. I've lost faith in Beethoven experts, and everyone knows there's no such thing as an economy expert.
And now we're going to continue with items of general news, beginning with one read by Jane.
Relocated street market helps city enjoy bumper festive season. Winchester's newly controversial street market helped the city enjoy a bumper Christmas. The market stores on the High Street, which have sparked some opposition, contributed to Winchester's Yuletide success, city councillors were told. Kevin Warren, the council's head of estates, said the number of people in the city centre in November and December had soared 18% compared to 12 months earlier. The market stalls moved from Middlebrook Street to the High Street last year, sparking initial opposition as they caused congestion and impeded access to shops. But Mr. Warren said most shop retailers were now happy with the stalls spread out up the High Street past the Buttercross and better access into shops such as M&S, Laura Ashley and Hobbs. He estimated the street markets in Winchester, that now run Wednesday to Sunday, were now turning over £3 to £4 million a year. But Councillor Robert Sanders said Winchester Business Improvement District bid was flip-flopping like a fish on the dock over the market's relocation. First they were positive, then negative, now they're positive again. They can't make up their minds what they are, he said. Mr. Warren said they can now see the facts demonstrated as being successful for the shops concerned. We have listened and overcome their concerns. Town Forum Chairman Brian Collin suggested the success at Christmas was not due to the street market, but to the Christmas market in Cathedral Close, which attracted hundreds of thousands of visitors. Figures for numbers visiting the Christmas market in the ice rink were still being awaited.
Social care cuts set to hit the frail elderly. Thousands of frail elderly people will have to dig deeper into their own pockets as Hampshire County Council plans to slash spending on care by £21 million. The Cabinet today is set to approve a £711 million budget that will see spending on adult social care fall by 8%, despite rising demand as population ages. Hourly home care charges for washing, dressing and feeding were hiked from £14.80 to £15.20 last year, and an increase to £15.30 is planned for those who fund their own care. The Conservative-run council also wants to increase charges for council-run care homes, Meals on Wheels and transport to day centres. The council is faced with a £19 million shortfall in government funding for all council services in 2012-13, equal to a 10% cut. The local authority gets most of its funding, £530 million, from council tax. County chiefs are halfway through an ambitious two-year, £100 million savings drive, including cutting £45 million from spending on adult social care. The cost-cutting axed 1,200 jobs last year, and a further 225 posts are to be shed in 2012. Adult social care will bear the brunt, with plans to axe a further 165 jobs by March 2013, including 53 in services for adults with learning disabilities. 8 day centres and 4 group homes have been earmarked for closure. The plan is to provide new facilities for the most disabled, but about 400 learning disabled adults will lose their day services.
Change is afoot at Free Car Park. The future of one of the last free all-day car parks in Winchester is in doubt. The City Council is currently considering restricting use of the car park in Hillier Way, Abbots Barton, amid safety fears. It will also look at the use of the space at the foot of St Catherine's Hill off Garnier Road, St Cross, the town forum heard. Councillors heard that the one in Hillier Way is being monopolised by commuters who park for free and then walk the 10 to 15 minutes into the city centre. But the commuters' arrival in the morning coincides with children and their parents heading to the nursery at the Denplan ground. The town forum ruled out introducing parking charges in the 32-space car park in Hillier Way as being too expensive to set up and run. However, it's looking at placing time limits on parking to stop it being used by commuters. Local ward councillor Sue Nelms said, "I have dodged traffic and walked through puddles. It's a dangerous road a lot of the time." Councillor Dominic Hiscock, who also represents the St Bartholomew ward, said the car park should be for users of River Park and Winnell Moors. The City Council is currently consulting residents in Abbots Barton about residents-only parking. It is one of the last areas within walking distance of the city centre, with no daytime bans on commuters. Andy Hickman, the City Council's head of access and infrastructure, estimated around 60 cars were parking free on streets in Abbots Barton every day.
Deal struck to ease the threat to post offices. Threats to the future of post offices have eased after a 10-year deal was struck between the Royal Mail and the Post Office. The agreement will give security to sub-postmasters and covers the full range of Royal Mail products available at post offices, such as first and second class post, parcels, airmail, recorded and special deliveries. Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, has welcomed the news. He said, "In opposition, Conservatives campaigned tirelessly to stop cuts to our post office network, and I led that in Winchester by making the case that very often it is the last shop in the village that goes when the post office closes. We lost a few, in Compton and in Littleton most painfully, but we saved many more, and I hope this announcement secures their future. I always said we have to find a business solution to ensure the long-term sustainability of our post office network, not just simply through more taxpayer cash at the issue. The government's announcement now means the future of our post office is secured, guaranteeing this valuable service for millions of people. Between March 2000 and March 2010, a total of 6,573 post offices were closed.
This headline is Late Night Buses Set for Comeback. Hope is rising that Winchester could soon see a return to late evening buses after the recent axing of services. Now the County Council is including a late evening service in forthcoming tender contracts. City councillors on the town forum last Wednesday agreed to set aside £10,000 for a possible part funding. County Council transport officers estimate a six-day-a-week service would cost up to £35,000 a year, with one between Thursdays and Saturday around £10,000. Forum chairman Brian Collin said the City Council could look for financial help from the University and Winchester Business Improvement District, known as BID. Steve Tilbury, corporate director, said the City Council has recently decided not to bail out general bus services as it would fuel public expectation and be financially unsustainable. But the town forum, made up of city councillors representing the six city wards, has a more limited brief within the city area. Councillor Collin warned, "This may not come to fruition, but this is an opportunity to put something in the budget if it turns out to be a realistic proposition." Councillor Robert Hutchison said, "This would help develop the evening economy." But Councillor Chris Pine suggested it may be better to subsidise taxis instead of buses. However, Councillor Lucille Thompson said getting a taxi from the centre to Stanmore costs £6 to £7. The buses would charge a flat rate £2. That seems a pretty good deal. The lack of nighttime buses is really restrictive on people having fun in the centre of town and getting home safely. Councillor Robert Sanders said the lack of buses fuelled antisocial behaviour with the pub crowd having to walk home. Teenagers, if they can't get home, will cause merry havoc, he said. After the meeting, Councillor Collin said, people are getting disturbed by people walking home from the pub while others are spending fortunes on taxis. Ideally, I would want to run the buses until 1 a.m. if possible, every half hour on a figure of eight loop around Winchester. Councillor Collin said he was also hoping to persuade Stagecoach to start running Sunday services. Sundays are not like Sundays anymore. They're more like Saturdays now in Winchester, he added. Hopefully in the new tenders, the private sector will recognise they can run a commercial bus service on a Sunday. The success of the Sunday farmers and art markets means that the city centre is now busy 7 days a week.
And another item about Winchester in the evening. Street pastors to step out on Thursdays. They are keen to do their bit to help make Winchester streets a safer place after dark. 20 new volunteers have signed up to be Winchester street pastors, which will enable the scheme to be expanded to cover Thursday nights. For the past 7 months, pastors have been patrolling the city on Friday and Saturday nights, offering help and advice to anyone in distress. Mark Hibbert Hingston, coordinator of the pastors, said, "Running pastor teams on Thursdays would help calm one of the busiest nights of the week." He said, "Thursdays would make a significant difference. From talking to door staff and police, they want us out on Thursdays because although there might not be much crime, there are a lot of students out." Mr. Hibbert Hingston added the pastors were starting to become part of the furniture in the Winchester community and had been very well received. He said the comments we get from the people in the street are so positive. There's a feeling building up from people that we have either helped them or helped someone they know. People tell us the level of aggression at night has gone down too since the street pastors arrived. The new recruits are currently in training along with their counterparts in Southampton and will start patrolling next month, with Thursday shifts planned to start in the city in April. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the smiling street pastors.
Villagers get up to speed on slowing cars. Residents in Swanmore have got together in a bid to reduce speeding in their village. Community Speed Watch Swanmore was formed after a survey was conducted as part of the village plan. Hotspots including Gravel Hill, Forest Road, New Road, Church Road and Swanmore Road are set to be the focus of speed monitoring. Mel Smith, coordinator, said, The Community Speed Watch group came about after a survey was sent out to residents. Speeding was one of the major concerns that came back from the survey, along with dogfoul and parking. From the results of the survey, we got in touch with the police and together launched the initiative. 18 residents have been recruited as volunteers, including two local GPs and some as old as 70, and have been trained in the use of roadside equipment by the Hampshire Police. The first session was completed last Wednesday. Mr. Smith said, "It was great to see people slowing down as soon as they saw us from a distance in our high-vis jackets." He added, "We would rather prevent speeding and accidents taking place instead of reporting incidents to the police."
Charities SOS as donations dry up. The future of a Hampshire charity that has provided a lifeline to hundreds of struggling families for nearly two decades is under threat as donations dry up. For 17 years, Home Start in Eastleigh has worked with families tackling domestic abuse, isolation and mental illness, helping to keep families together. But a lack of donations has forced bosses to close their doors to more families seeking help, and if funds are not found, the charity could face the axe. It needs £10,000 a month to keep it going. Donations have dried up, a grant from Hampshire County Council has been cut by £5,000, and the charity was left with a £14,500 black hole after Children in Need diverted their money to support new projects. Trustees have cut the hours of the six staff and are now appealing for individuals and companies for help. Home Start supports families in and around Eastleigh, including Hedge End, Fair Oak and Chandler's Ford, and demand for the team is rising as more families hit financial hardship. It is currently helping 65 families with practical support, parenting skills, emotional support and valuable trips out for those facing financial difficulties. Mary Diaper, scheme manager, said, "It is so sad to see all the hard work put in by the team and our wonderful band of volunteers swept aside by lack of funding. We hope that a few donations, no matter what size, can help us get back on track and operating again normally, helping our families through such a difficult economic climate. To make a donation, call 02380 612 310 or visit their office at 16 Romsey Road, Eastleigh." I'll say that again. To make a donation, call 02380 612 310 or visit their office at 16 Romsey Road. And an extension says, "There are extended family. So many families would be lost without it." Those are the words of Eastleigh mum Kelly Asprey, who has seen her life turn around thanks to the support from Home Start. 5 years ago, Kelly was a single mum of one, struggling to cope as a first-time mother, feeling isolated and alone, lacking confidence in her parenting skills. But through Home Start's mum and baby group, she met other mums who shared parenting tips, offered a shoulder to cry on, and went on days out to the beach, which Kelly would have never been able to afford. When she suffered from pelvic problems during her next pregnancy that left her in a wheelchair, home help offered by the charity was invaluable, helping to clean the house and play with her eldest daughter and driving her to the weekly support group.
Mum who's jumping into fundraising for appeal. An Eastleigh mum is preparing to jump off the side of a 60-foot hospital building to thank the charity which helped her family deal with the devastating loss of her son. Linda Pickering is not usually one for daredevil antics, but knowing the vital lifeline charity, Click Sargent, is for grieving families struggling to cope with the loss of a loved one, she didn't think twice about taking the plunge. The mum of three knows the money she raises through her abseil down Southampton General Hospital will ensure other families will get the invaluable care and support which helped her heartbroken family pick up the pieces after her eldest son lost his battle with cancer. That's why she's backing the appeal, to raise £40,000 for the Children's Cancer Charity, to ensure they are there for 10 families faced with such a devastating diagnosis. Matt was diagnosed with a rare liver cancer when he was 20 years old, and doctors gave him just 6 to 9 months to live. Determined to get as much out of that time as possible, Car-Mad Matt, his two younger brothers and his parents enjoyed a year jam-packed full of motoring adventures, which saw him take to some of the most famous racetracks in the country. But his death almost a year after his diagnosis was when Click Sargent stepped in to help his family get to grips with their loss, especially his youngest brother, Simon, who was just 14 at the time. Linda, who will be part of 98 people taking part in the sponsored abseil on Sunday, February the 5th, said, "What many don't realise is that they are there for families afterwards, and that is why this appeal is so important. Sometimes parents aren't the best people to help their children because they're finding it hard to cope too, or they are just too close for a child to open up to. Simon found it hard to cope and was struggling at school, but Click Sargent stepped in and looked after him, took him out and let him chat about it all. They got him back on his feet, and that really was amazing for us."
School's investigation is inventive and innovative. The Intec Science Centre and Planetarium Winchester is working with local schools, including Romsey School, to design innovative solutions to real-life problems. The project, dubbed the We Can STEM Challenge, is being organised in association with Waring's contractors and involves students studying science, technology, engineering and maths. Students, in teams of six, work together for one term, investigating and inventing products used by people with disabilities. The event was attended by former medal-winning Paralympian and disability coach Bronwyn Carter, who brought examples of wheelchairs for the children to use as inspiration, whilst Paralympian shooter Lorraine Lambert was also there with her specially modified rifles and equipment. The project will finish for the 10 schools at the end of March. The winning team will go forward to the regional Big Bang Challenge with a chance of leading on to the national finals. Waring's manager-director Philippe Jouy said, "We take our role in the community very seriously and are proud to play a part in helping so many youngsters get the most out of their education." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of the students from the schools with some of the products which they have been helping to work on, and the poster, "Together We Can Make a Difference."
Fewer students apply for university places. Hampshire universities have suffered a fall in the number of students seeking places this autumn after the hike in tuition fees. Figures from the University and Colleges Admissions Service, UCAS, show the number of students living in the South East applying for degree courses has slumped by 7,016, a drop of 10%. Sparsholt College, which is now planning to charge $7,800 a year, experienced one of the biggest declines at 28% to 294 applications for degree courses. However, it is mostly a further education college. A college spokesperson said it was misleading to compare applications to 2011, as that had been an exceptional year with more candidates applying to miss the higher fees coming in 2012. Compared to 2010, the number of students applying for BSc degrees was up 2%, she said. The picture at the University of Winchester was noticeably better, with a 3.3% drop in applications this year to 8,688, compared to a fall of 8.7% nationally. While applications from UK students declined by 6%, the number of overseas students seeking a place on undergraduate courses increased by 88% to 200. The University of Winchester is particularly popular with students from China, Japan, the USA, Norway, Singapore, South Korea and India. Prospective students from EU countries, who face the same fee increases as their English peers, applied for 39% fewer places. The University of Winchester is planning to increase fees for English students to £8,500 a year, while international undergraduates face annual fees of £9,775. Mature students seem to be staying away, with applications from students aged 21 plus falling 23.5% compared to a 13.5% national decline. Southampton University, which will charge the highest possible fees of £9,000 a year, saw overall applications drop by 6% and undergraduate courses by 3.8%. An even more marked drop of 15% to 12,127 applications was recorded at Southampton Solent University, now planning to charge £7,500. Meanwhile, the University of Portsmouth saw the number of applications fall by 9.3% to 25,853. A University of Winchester spokesman said, "Applications have increased significantly over the last few years, and even with a 3.3% decline this year, still represents our second strongest year for applications, 16% up on the 2010 figures, following an annual increase of 14% in 2011. At a time when many higher education institutions are cutting back, Winchester is building a new £5.6 million teaching building and a £20 million 500-room hall of residence in Burma Road.
New horizons for InTech boss Phil, the director who helped put Science Centre on the map. He's been the face behind the growing success of a Winchester visitor attraction. In the 9 years since Phil Winfield took over as director of the InTech Science Centre and Planetarium, it has more than doubled its visitor numbers and has introduced the largest planetarium in the country. Now he's moving on to pastures new, with a role at a science centre in Bristol. It's an opportunity for me to take on a bigger challenge and more responsibility, and it's an exciting challenge, said Mr. Winfield. During my time at InTech, we've managed to grow visitor numbers by over 100% and stabilise the financial position. Mr. Winfield takes up his new post as chief executive for At Bristol, a similar science centre on a larger scale, at the beginning of April. He said on his arrival in 2002, the centre had just moved from its location as a small base in King's School to its current site at Mourne Hill, thanks to a £5.5 million grant from the National Lottery. But this did not extend to cover the running costs. He said at that time, InTech had quite a large debt and was making an annual loss, but now there's only a small debt and it breaks even each year. Visitor numbers have gone from 57,000 people a year to 120,000, and InTech receives record numbers of school children, nearly 31,000 a year. During his 9 years, the centre has had several specialist exhibits. It does lecture series in the evenings and has a large exhibit on the science of sport planned to coincide with the Olympic year. Mr. Winfield also oversaw getting the funding for the planetarium in 2008, but said it was important to stress that it was a team effort that had led to InTech's success. He added that it was the atmosphere of the Science Centre that sets it apart. One of the beauties of InTech is it only has 21 staff, and it's very much a team that works together, a family atmosphere. It's a struggle to create that atmosphere in a big organisation, he said. Our ultimate aim is to encourage more children into science, engineering and technology careers, which the economy needs. It's always difficult to measure success, but if you take feedback for success, we create memorable experiences that change people's attitude to science and engineering.
Next bishop consecrated. The next bishop of Winchester has taken a major step to taking up the role after he was consecrated at an official ceremony in London last Wednesday. The Reverend Canon Tim Dakin was made a bishop in the service led by the Archbishop of Canterbury at St Paul's Cathedral, watched by nearly 2,000 people. Canon Dakin, 53, who has spent 12 years as General Secretary of the Church Mission Society, will be enthroned in Winchester Cathedral on April the 21st as the 97th Bishop of Winchester. And there is a photograph of the Canon Tim Dakin being made Bishop of Winchester by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, at St Paul's Cathedral.
Perrins take their curtain call awards. Ulster pupils are celebrating after picking up a regional AmDram award. Perrin School Youth Theatre took home the Youth Ensemble Prize at the annual Curtain Call Awards for their production of Oliver. It was one of the school's biggest ever productions, with around 120 students making up the leads, chorus and orchestra, when it was performed last July. Several of the cast attended the Glitzy Awards ceremony at the De Vere Grand Harbour Hotel in Southampton last Sunday to pick up their prize. Marilitza Treser, team leader of the creative arts at the school, said, "We're absolutely thrilled to bits, and it's a real sense of achievement for the pupils. We had around 150 people involved in total, and we really feel that this means everybody gets to take credit for the award." Ms. Treser added the award would spur the school on to keep up the standards of their productions. And there's a charming picture of the, I assume, the cast of young people smartly in dinner jackets and evening dresses, holding up their award and a large bottle of champagne to the camera.
Elle takes her petition to the top. A University of Winchester student went to Downing Street last week to protest against extreme hunger. Elle Harding, 22, was in London representing Winchester in Save the Children's campaign to end hunger in impoverished places like West Africa. She was one of 66 representatives from cities across the country who went to the Prime Minister's residence to present him with a charter to end world hunger, although he was not there. Miss Harding is training to be a primary school teacher and said she wanted to do something to help less privileged children. She said, "I've been to Kenya and Thailand to teach English, so I have seen it firsthand, and it's nice to do something to help those who aren't as lucky as us." These events promote Save the Children's work, and with 66 cities involved, it also makes it a local issue, and I think it was a successful day for us all. The charity amassed 18,000 signatures calling on David Cameron to sign the charter and urged 91% of MPs via email to ask Mr. Cameron about the matter during last week's Prime Minister's question time. Their efforts were successful when Edinburgh North MP Mark Lazarevich asked Mr. Cameron whether the international community's response to hunger problems in East Africa was too late. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Elle Harding with the charter outside number 10.
As dishwashers go, this takes the biscuit. Chilbolton's Dish has finally received a good and proper wash. Nearly 1,000 litres of paint later, and after more than 4 months' hard effort by 10 men, a bright and fresh 25-metre antenna, known locally to its home at Chilbolton Observatory as The Dish, was unveiled by Romsey MP Caroline Noakes. It is the first proper clean and paint The Dish has had in 17 years. The painters responsible for its refurnishment spent 17 weeks crawling over the antenna's steelwork, scraping, grinding and blasting away nearly 2 decades of grime, old paint and dust before giving The Dish a fresh lick of paint. The world's largest fully steerable meteorological radar dish allows scientists to detect space hazards, carry out climate work, and analyse extreme weather conditions. The team who work at the observatory are part of a European network, and in addition to weather, are also involved in space monitoring, including tracking and detecting spacecraft for the European Space Agency and characterising satellite missions. Atmosphere observations made there can be used to improve our understanding of how clouds form and develop into storms. The data is also used to improve models used to project climate change. The radar is used to study how weather affects communication systems such as mobile phones and digital television. And the article is accompanied by photographs of the cleaners cleaning the enormous dish.
Candidates come forward for new police post. Retired military generals are among the candidates to become the new boss of Hampshire Police. Ex-police officers and councillors are also among more than 20 people vying for the Conservative Party's nomination for the new post of police commissioner in November. In an attempt to attract a wide variety of people, Tory chiefs are considering using open primaries to choose their candidate, which would give everybody across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight a say in who they put forward. Councillor Jackie Raymond, of the Labour chairman of the Hampshire Police Authority, is also believed to be considering running. Elected police commissioners have been a controversial policy from the coalition government. Critics say the election could be won by someone standing on an extreme platform or with a highly localised focus. For the Conservatives, Fareham Council leader Sean Woodward has formally applied to be the candidate. Given the political makeup of the county, the Tories' representative would be a favourite for the £85,000 a year post. A backbench Conservative MP from each area, Meon Valley's George Hollenbury in Hampshire's case, has been asked to help with the search. The operation is being run by Jim Fleming, the chairman of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Conservatives. He said holding an open primary is certainly one of the options. He said public interest is not going to be as high as other elections. Therefore, we need to be doing everything we can to engage with the public. Candidates would not need to be Tory party members, he said. He added, a couple of sitting councillors, some ex-police officers who retired 3 or 4 years ago, and a couple of retired services ex-generals have come forward so far. A real range of people.
Butterflies returning to woodland. Butterflies are returning to ancient woodland near Winchester, thanks to the work of Marwell conservationists. The Colden Common Wildlife Park launched a project to restore its surrounding woodland in April 2010, with the results beginning to show. Conservation work carried out in the wood includes clearing paths for natural light, removing foreign species like European larch, and creating corridors between copses to allow movement of wildlife. Initial work was supported by a grant of almost £15,000 from the Viola Environmental Trust, which has helped Marwell increase the number of butterflies, such as the orange tip and gatekeeper species, as well as protect ancient plants native to the woods. Martin Wilkie, Marwell Wildlife's conservation biologist, said, "The long-term management of this habitat is an integral part of the conservation work that Marwell Wildlife undertakes, and it is key for conserving the flora and fauna of these important woodlands. As well as enhancing local biodiversity, the nature reserve will also improve access to nature for local communities. This phase of restoration will continue until June 2012.
Rundown park set for a facelift. A major refurbishment plan has been unveiled to overhaul rundown facilities at a popular Hampshire attraction. Up to £67,500 could be spent on updating paths, car parks and fishing facilities at the Lakeside Country Park in Eastleigh. And a further £12,500 has been marked to fund a feasibility study as civic chiefs look to replace ageing buildings at the site off Wide Lane. Once the budget is set, further cash would be ploughed into bulldozing the existing facilities and improving what is on offer for water sports groups. Initially, developer contributions look set to be used for a £24,000 path resurfacing scheme, with a further £10,000 spent on replacing and fixing fishing platforms. Around £13,000 would be spent on car park provisions and more than £20,000 on the access road into the site. The authority's countryside service also wants to spend £400 entering Lakeside for the coveted Green Flag Award in 2012. The restored gravel works featured 60 acres of lakes, wet meadow and woodland, as well as walking trails, picnic sites, a cafe and the famous Eastleigh Lakeside Railway.
Following that, there's a warning over beauty spot car crime. Police are warning drivers to avoid leaving valuables in vehicles at Winchester beauty spots after a spate of thefts at car parks in Cheesford Head, Farley Mount and Old Winchester Hill. Sergeant Phil Shaw of Winchester Priority Crime Team said, "You may think your valuables are safe if you lock them in your boot, but we'd advise you not to do this. Often at these beauty spot car parks, thieves are watching what you do. We'd ask that everyone seen acting suspiciously is reported to us. Tell us what cars they're in, and we can then investigate." He added, "Replacing smashed windows on vehicles and stolen property such as bank cards is upsetting and an inconvenience. It can often be avoided by removing valuables and locking your vehicle."
Surviving the long day out. Winchester, It might be one of Britain's wealthiest cities, but not everyone in Winchester has a roof over their heads. Last Saturday, a group of volunteers took a crash course in what life was like on the city's streets. The long day out challenged them to survive from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. in the cold, with just a handful of change. They were able to visit the Trinity Centre in Derngate and the Winchester Church's night shelter in Drury Street, which are set to benefit from the fundraising challenge. Around a dozen volunteers signed up, including former Winchester Mayor, Councillor Dominic Hiscock. The Hyde Tavern was the start and finish point for the 15-hour challenge, which was organised by landlady Jan Theodore.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams too. And thanks to our readers, Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Bye.
And Sheila Shepherd.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet when you finish listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.